Welcome to the Experience Darden podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Amanda Wiggins. Amanda is a second-year student here at the Darden School of Business, and she's also president of a student organization called Humans of Darden. We recently connected with Amanda via Zoom to talk a little bit more about her background, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, what her experience at Darden has been like thus far, as well as her involvement with Humans of Darden and her role as president. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my interview with Amanda Wiggins. Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Excited to have you on the podcast today. First and foremost, before we get into everything, tell me a little bit more about how things have been going with you or during this sort of quarantine time where we're spending more time at home. You doing okay?
Yes, all things considered, I'm doing great. I'm spending a lot of time cooking and on my bike, so, you know, I can't complain.
All right. Well, appreciate your taking time out for the podcast. It's good to have you here. For our listeners at home, tell us just a little bit more about you. Who are you? And I guess, what was your academic professional background before coming to Darden?
Sure. So I am originally from California. I grew up in the Bay Area. I went to Middlebury for college. So my undergrad was East Coast. I spent 5 years in the nonprofit sector before coming to Darden and was working mostly right before Darden. I was working in San Francisco for a nonprofit that worked in criminal justice. That's really where my passion lies. And what was the second part of your question? I already forgot.
Oh, well, you know, so professional background, it sounds like you're into that. And anything else that you did before coming to Darden, or was it nonprofit work and then thinking about an MBA?
Yeah, it was entirely in the nonprofit sector. I'd say before that job, I was working for a larger nonprofit called Aspen Institute doing event management. So it was two very different nonprofit experiences. And my undergrad was, you know, I studied history, I went to a liberal arts school. So it was, I would say I fall into the quote unquote non-traditional Darden background. But it was different, and I have loved being at Darden because it's just been, you know, such a change of pace.
So is an MBA something you thought about for a long time, or did you kind of come to that idea relatively close to when you decided to apply to Darden?
Yeah, so I've always loved school, and I had always seen myself going to grad school eventually. When I initially joined the nonprofit that I was at right before Darden, that was going to be, for me, a longer term commitment. I saw myself there for a long time. I was really passionate about the mission. Unfortunately, the organization had issues. It really didn't end up being what I thought I signed up for. And so that really caused my gears to turn in terms of speeding up that timeline. Thinking, do I want to go back to school? Yes. And what type of school? I honestly considered every type of grad program. I looked at a JD, I looked at an MSW, and ultimately I'm a dual degree student here, so I'm in the School of Education as well, and I felt like that degree really fit my needs and my interests at the time when I really started to think more seriously about coming back to school.
From an admissions perspective, we get a lot of questions from students who may be thinking about a dual degree, and what ultimately led you to say, hey, I want to do an MBA and a master's in education?
I believe deeply in cross-disciplinary learning, and I've always been someone who's worked really well cross-functionally in professional roles. So in my most recent role, I was working at the intersection, I would say, of sort of organizational management and education. I was managing a learning program inside California State Prisons. And to me, the components of the business degree and the education degree catered to the skills I really felt like I was lacking and would help me build towards a career that I ultimately saw myself pursuing. So I think, you know, when I was in my role prior to Darden, I felt like, wow, I could really use some of the more analytical financial data tools that I didn't get as a history undergrad. And then also, you know, running an educational program comes with a certain amount of responsibility. And I felt also underqualified to be managing people's learning. And so to me, the dual degree felt like it would give me both that cross-disciplinary opportunity as well as a more diverse skill set to be better prepared to work in both of those areas.
You had mentioned your passion for criminal justice. I'm curious the sort of source or inspiration for that passion. Is it something that you were always focused on sort of as you grew up? Is something that you came to maybe a little bit later, post-college? I'm curious about that interest.
Yeah, the short answer is a podcast. So I listened to a podcast when I was 18 that profiled a drama teacher who was teaching Act 5 of Hamlet inside a correctional facility. And that was a moment I remember exactly where I was. And I had, you know, I grew up with no shortage of awareness of the world's problems. And to me, learning about the criminal justice system in America through that podcast was the first time anyone had ever spoken to me about what was going on in that realm. And I remember feeling so just overtaken by a sense of, why aren't we talking about this? And so that led me down a path of, you know, this is something I want to be a part of making better. And so I ended up working one summer in college for the guy who produced that podcast. And then I ended up volunteering at a local correctional facility in Vermont. And, you know, after a few years at the Aspen Institute, felt like it's something I really wanted to dive fully into as my full-time work.
You mentioned teaching inside the California State Prison. What were you teaching?
So the program I was managing was sort of a three-pronged program. It was employment readiness, entrepreneurship, and personal development. And so I wasn't actually, well, I did do some content development, but the content was mostly there. I was facilitating, I was managing, and improving. So the program really aimed to help build employment skills. As many people know, people who are released from prison often don't have those and can't get a job, either due to stigma or lack of preparedness, or and most often both. So our goal was to equip people coming out of prison with, you know, how do you build a resume? How do you go into an interview? As well as some more, you know, you might call them soft skills, but how do you confront guilt and shame? How do you look someone in the eye? And so part of that program required everyone to pitch a business idea. So it was a really, I would say, dynamic and powerful program.
That does sound like really incredible work. What did you learn along the way, or what stand out to you as maybe some of your favorite memories from that experience?
Oh, wow. Let's see. I mean, so the program was an 8-month program. And so we always started with a kickoff, and then 8 months later, we would have a graduation, and we would bring groups of professionals from the Bay Area into the facilities to coach, to mentor, and then ultimately to serve as judges, sort of like Shark Tank on the graduation day. And I loved when we would kick off a new class, the like the attitude I would get sometimes, you know, people only showing up because it was credit or time off their sentence. And then by the end of the 8 months, they're dancing and they're pitching and they're crying oftentimes. And so I think the truly the transformational power of believing in these groups of men and seeing them start to believe in themselves was really powerful.
I can imagine that does sound like an arc where you would be at the very end of it, felt like you had gone on a journey together.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's fast forward a bit. You come to Darden. What about, you know, sort of Darden in particular resonated with you as you were kind of looking at things. You had mentioned your background a bit, and I'm curious how you sort of ultimately landed on going to school in Charlottesville.
Yeah, so for me, Darden was always my number one choice for a handful of reasons. One is the dual degree program. There are only a few top MBA programs that do offer that. And so I knew that was interesting to me. The second was the case method. I, you know, coming from a liberal arts background, I couldn't imagine myself sitting in an accounting lecture. And frankly, finance and accounting scared me. So I loved the thought of being able to discuss them and not just sit and listen. So the case method was a big draw. And also the emphasis that Darden places on teaching and learning was important to me. I didn't want to go to a school that was really solely focused on, you know, networking and job placement. I wanted to learn because I knew I needed to learn, right? I had never taken a finance or accounting class. And so I wanted to come to a school that took pride in that. And Darden certainly does.
That is true. Certainly a school that hangs its hat on the educational experience, which to me is always a very holistic thing, right? In the classroom mm-hmm. and outside the classroom. Imagine going to Middlebury, you probably had some experience living in a smaller college town, although Charlottesville is a little bit larger, I would imagine, than where Middlebury is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're not dissimilar, but for both my time in Vermont and so far in Charlottesville, It's felt, when it can feel overwhelming academically or professionally, it has felt like a little utopia of a vacation at the same time. I mean, I mentioned I ride bikes and, you know, the ability to just get on my bike out right out my door and, you know, be in rolling Virginia hills is pretty special. So I feel grateful for that.
I'm guessing you're a road cyclist?
I am. Yeah, I started as a mountain biker when I lived in Colorado and have recently switched to road cycling.
That's awesome. Well, one of the many benefits of being in the Charlottesville area is all the outdoor activities. Talked about it quite a bit here on the podcast. Let's talk about your first year experience. It's certainly an experience that gets a lot of attention from incoming students. People know about the core curriculum and, you know, getting used to the case method, learning teams, all these kinds of things. But I'm always interested in how this translates to people's own experience. What was that first year like for you?
Wow. Yeah. First year was a little like drinking from a fire hose. I was told by many people that, you know, Darden has the reputation for X, Y, and Z, and it's going to be a lot, and you don't really understand it till you're in it. But I think for as intense as it was, the amount of support that I felt like there was between my learning team, my professors, my friends, was similarly overwhelming. I think, you know, people want you to succeed here. And so it challenged me and I grew in ways that I didn't anticipate, but I definitely feel like I came out the other side stronger and definitely having learned a lot.
We get a lot of questions about the case method. Prospective students aren't always sure what it looks like or what the experience is like. It may feel a little bit intimidating to some people, having to show up and participate in class, talk about things you don't really maybe have a lot of personal direct experience with. Was there a learning curve with the case method, or was it what you expected coming from a liberal arts background where there probably was a lot of in-class discussion?
I think there is a learning curve. I was also pleasantly surprised at how little judgment there was within my section. You know, I was someone who felt very self-conscious about speaking up in a finance or accounting, you know, class because I knew I would be, I felt like I knew I would be wrong. And I think one of the things that worked in my favor and that I would encourage all students and prospective students to start to internalize as much as they can is the sooner you can drop your ego and recognize that everyone else is just as nervous as you are, whether it's in accounting or LO, to speak up and be wrong, you know, the better you will be. And I think as soon as I started to realize and talk to peers like, yeah, this is terrifying, but we do it and we support each other when we do, then your learning will get even deeper and more impactful. So there's definitely a learning curve, but I think, you know, my section with their support and, you know, just love for one another really accelerated our ability to speak up and participate.
And it's not always easy to be vulnerable in a graduate school environment. I think people oftentimes feel like they have to have it together all the time, particularly at an MBA program. But I've been struck by the amount of vulnerability. It seems like students are willing to show each other within their sections. Each section sets its own norms. I'm curious what norms, if there are any that stand out, your section had.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And I was section B, I am section B, and we had some great norms. I think one of my favorites was every Tuesday, a member of my section would lead with the section B birds is what we were. So it was get to know your nest, and someone would give a 5-minute presentation about either, you know, an accelerated timeline of their background or something specific in their life that was meaningful to them. So that was a really fantastic way to get to know one another. I also started hosting small section dinners because I felt like I just wanted to get to know my classmates. So I would have 6 to 8, you know, first come, first serve people over. And what we started doing was fun, which ended up being really fun, was I would have a sous chef. So, you know, one of my classmates was from Peru, so he cooked us a Peruvian dinner. One of my classmates had been a chef before, so he, you know, contributed some of his recipes. And so I think that was a really wonderful way to just spend a few hours outside of the classroom getting to know one another.
Yeah, and one of the benefits of being in Charlottesville, I always think of it as sort of layering of the experience, right? The academic experience will always be there for an MBA program, but the fact that you're all together in this college town tends to mean you also socialize with the people you go to school with, whereas it might be a little bit different if you're in a bigger city.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've talked to a handful of friends who are in cities, and it's totally different. So it really does foster that sense of community being in Charlottesville and, you know, living in basically two different living situations. Everyone's within an arm's reach of each other.
That's right. There, while we don't, we talk a little bit about the living situation here on the podcast, but there are a handful of apartments that it seems, at least particularly in the first year, students live in, and they're all within pretty close walking distance of grounds. So what have you been doing this summer? We've had a few people here on the podcast who talked about the internship experience that they were planning to have. Were you virtual for your internship? What was it like?
Yeah, so I was mostly virtual. I was one of the, I guess, casualties of, you know, COVID internships. My offer was rescinded. That was really stressful, I would say, not having an internship mid-March, but I actually ended up doing two internships to some degree. My primary internship was with the social enterprise wing of Homeboy Industries, and it was kind of a fortuitous plan B. I was on Facebook one day, just late night, and wondering what I was going to do with my summer, and a former student of mine works with them. And for those who don't know, Homeboy Industries is the world's largest gang reentry rehabilitation program. They're based in Los Angeles. And so he is now a trainee with them. And through him, I was connected to the CEO and ended up getting an opportunity to go work for their social enterprises. And so Homeboy Industries, as a nonprofit, does more of the direct service work for people coming out of gangs or prisons, tattoo removal therapy. It was started by a wonderful gentleman named Father Greg Boyle, and he's, you know, sort of the figurehead and really leader of the organization in terms of the counseling and rehab side. And then they've started these social enterprise businesses to employ the people that they serve. So I ended up working with their electronic recycling business and their bakery, which recently shifted entirely to e-commerce for obvious reasons. And so, you know, it was actually, I think at the end of the day, a really fantastic opportunity to join my prior work, my passion for serving these communities with utilizing some of my new skill set. So I worked on, you know, I ran some regressions and did some data analysis and made recommendations. So it ended up being a really wonderful experience.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your initial internship offer, but I was going to ask you a little bit about, you know, how you kind of reoriented, and it sounds like maybe used your own network. Did you work with any of the folks at the Career Center or any alumni?
Yeah.
Work through all of this?
Yeah. So I did. I worked with some folks at the Career Center. I guess I mentioned that I was doing two. So Homeboy was the first. And then through my education degree, I got matched up with a local ed tech company. So here in Charlottesville, called Data Classroom, and ended up working for them part-time remotely. And so I worked with the iLab and the Catalyst Accelerator through my education advisor in those programs. But, you know, I think I had a couple weeks of just like true frustration, because the companies that could hire and could afford to keep, you know, hiring, or their employees had already hired, and those who couldn't were not hiring. And so I just felt like I was in this cycle of, you know, trying and getting told no, or getting told we're not hiring. So I know that towards the end of the summer, the CDC, you know, was really proactive about matching students with alumni or on-grounds opportunities, which was great. But I'm a planner. I like to know what's next. And so I was, you know, for a couple of weeks, really, really stressed about what I was going to do. But I believe that everything works out the way it should. And, you know, I think they did a good job at supporting students for, you know, plan B opportunities.
I can understand, you know, the wanting to have, or having everything kind of planned, and then what it must be like to have that shift on you later. And so credit to you to sort of persevere through that and to find what sounds, at least to me listening here on the podcast, two great opportunities. It sounds like you ultimately had a good summer.
I did. I had a really fantastic summer.
So we invited you on the podcast for many reasons, Amanda, one of which, though, was to talk about your work as president of Humans of Darden. I'm not sure how many of our prospective students know about Humans of Darden. Do you want to share a little bit more about what that is before we dive into your role as president and what that means?
Definitely. So Humans of Darden is a relatively new organization at Darden and was modeled after the widely known Instagram account, Humans of New York, which for those who aren't familiar, or a reminder for those who are, it basically profiles individuals captured on the streets of New York and their stories. So they post a picture and then some language that really gives color and background to someone that, you know, you either would not have expected or would not have spoken to, or, you know, really this idea that everyone's got a story. And so a couple students, 2 years back, I believe, started Humans of Darden to foster this idea at Darden. I think we get so caught up in what is your internship? What did you do before Darden? Did you do the finance case, that we forget to take time to learn about the people in our community? And so Humans of Darden tries to do that, and tries to do that by giving intentional opportunities for community members, whether it's professors, first year, second year, staff members, whoever, to connect. And whether that's over an informal first coffee or a dinner or board games, we're really trying to help members of the community make connections that might have otherwise been missed.
That sounds incredible. We've had people on to talk about Darden Stories, which is another, sounds like similar thing where people maybe are sharing aspects of their background or something they've experienced. But I do think making time in a really busy environment and world, obviously business school, particularly at Darden, you know, people have very full plates, but making time to remind people that, yes, everyone did have lives before Darden, and there's, you know, there's a lot of depth to the people in this community. That seems like a worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah. I think you're spot on when you say depth. It's. I think that the people I've met at Darden are arguably some of the most interesting people I've ever met. And so, yeah, I think Darden Stories and Humans of Darden have, you know, very similar missions. We're crafting an opening week orientation activity next year in partnership. And I think, you know, both organizations are super important in an environment that can often feel like all your anything, the only thing that's important is where you spend your summer. And we just, you know, fundamentally believe that that's not true, and aim to remind people that, like you said, everyone has depth and should be allowed to share that.
So what led you to become president, or say, this is a role I would like to have?
So it wasn't my original plan, to be totally honest. For our orientation, the outgoing president of the club gave sort of a overview, and I had participated in something in my undergrad career, which was called Dinner with Strangers. And it was a randomized group of people from the school community that would get together, cook dinner, and share a meal with a group that they, again, otherwise wouldn't. And so that background made me want to do that at Darden. And so I approached her and I said, can I do something like this through Humans of Darden? And she said, we already do. So yeah. And so I ended up being the first year liaison for that program called the Dinner Club through Humans of Darden my first year. And like I said, also was hosting separately Section B dinners. And so I, you know, truly believed in the mission. And then Vita ultimately said, you know, is this something you would be interested in doing? And I hadn't really given it thought, but the more I did, the more I felt like it was such a, you know, impactful part of my first year experience, that if I could continue that on for another year and hopefully, you know, make first year's experience a little bit better or easy or connections accessible, then that would be worth my time.
So I know it's early. We're, you know, getting ready to kick off the school year here in the coming weeks. So what do you have planned for Humans of Darden? Do you have any things that are on your mind or that you're considering?
Yeah, so I think we are definitely continuing our quote unquote regularly scheduled programming that consists of first coffee, board game nights, and dinners. I think we are doing a lot of adaptation, but I also think that, you know, our mission is to get small groups of people together, and that's kind of the only thing you can do right now. So we're trying to figure out ways where we can safely and responsibly, you know, get people together in ways that everyone feels comfortable with. But ultimately, our work is done best when it is in, you know, intimate settings. And so next week, like I mentioned, we are going to host a virtual, co-host a virtual Darden Stories with that organization, which will be followed by a first year opportunity to sort of share a mini Darden story about themselves and give some of their background to a randomized group of people. And then throughout the first week, we're looking into virtual first coffees. In the spring, we did some virtual board game nights, which were a huge success. We did a sort of TED style event where professors and students gave a 12-minute talk about themselves. So, you know, we're continually thinking of ways to be better and to make these opportunities more available, but we're all really excited to, you know, do the best that we can to make sure that the second years and the first years, you know, continue making these really meaningful connections.
Do you find that students are eager for this kind of outlet? I would imagine it's probably nice to have a diversion from school and career stuff and, you know, the pressure of that.
I think students are eager. I think what is also true is, I mean, we're neurologically wired to just gravitate to what's familiar. And so I think there is some convincing that sometimes needs to be done to push people outside their comfort zone. And I say that delicately because comfort zone, I mean, it shouldn't be uncomfortable to talk to a group of people you don't know, especially when you're incoming and you might not know anyone in your class. But like you said earlier, it does take some vulnerability, and there are often false expectations that everyone who starts at Darden has everything together. And I think the sooner we can signal to incoming and prospective and existing students that vulnerability is something that's embraced at Darden, not, you know, frowned upon, the happier and the more connected we will all eventually be.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you help students take that step or say, you know, it's actually going to be all right? Do they just have to take the plunge and discover that it's just fine?
You know, I think a lot of it is done by example. So, you know, I can remember very vividly Laleen, who's a marketing professor. She gave a talk the first week of orientation that was very, you know, made her very vulnerable. And, you know, it definitely, I think, for most of my class was surprising, but a welcome surprise in terms of saying like, okay, this is welcome here. And I think that's also what we're trying to get at next week when we do Darden Stories before we ask first years to do that, because it will hopefully set the tone by having second years share sort of a micro story about themselves. You know, we've had Darden Stories covers everything from, you know, losing a parent to illness to you know, being incarcerated. So I think there's no topic that's off limits in Darden Stories. And so we want people to feel comfortable, and we want people to show up in ways that make them feel comfortable. So whether that's sharing about your love for, you know, ceramics, or that's you telling us that you had, you know, a really awful and hard battle with cancer, like those, you know, again, those topics are equally welcomed. And so I think by setting that example, by setting that tone through professors in first years, we can hopefully carry on the tradition of upholding, you know, the support of vulnerability here.
Now that is great. And you're right. Role modeling probably does go a long way. What else are you looking forward to in your second year? I'm amazed all the time when I talk to people about the progression first year, second year, how quickly it all seems to move for people. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to?
Let's see. I am looking forward to, so I'm doing a little bit of entrepreneurial work. So I'm looking forward to exploring that. Actually, a learning team member and I are informally but formally starting a business. So that's going to be a fun little venture. I'm going to do some part-time work on the side. And I think, you know, having a year where I'm not constantly thinking about, you know, not knowing anyone, needing to make friends, doing three cases a night. I think just having a little bit more time to do exactly what I want to do is going to be a welcome change.
Have you always been an entrepreneurial person? I've been struck as you told your story about sort of the hustle aspect of it. There's a lot of networking and outreach and sort of thinking about how to make things better. Have you always been an entrepreneurial person?
You know, it's funny. I've never thought of myself as an entrepreneur, and I never even considered starting a business before 6 months ago. I worked with entrepreneurs In college, actually, I worked for the Middlebury Center on Social Entrepreneurship and helped students start businesses. And so I always loved that. Like, I loved supporting students who wanted to start businesses. And then, you know, with my former work was helping individuals who were pitching ideas and potentially becoming entrepreneurs after they got out of prison. You know, I was supporting that work too. And I've always seen myself as someone who's better at supporting that work than actually doing it. But I think for me, it was something that I just couldn't stop thinking about. And I actually received really good advice from a second year as I was chewing on this idea, who said, you know, they were starting a business and they had also structured their schedule basically so that they could work on this business through learning, right? So take a VC course, and for all your projects, instead of creating a fictional company or, you know, idea for the projects you may have to do, is like, do it for your business. And so that struck a chord with me, because I'm always someone who learns better by doing. I can read a theoretical briefing or something, but I prefer to make a model for a company that exists rather than a fictional one. So I, you know, adapted that strategy and figured, hey, let's go for it. And, you know, talked to an advisor who said, do it, don't wait. So it was just, you know, a series of fortunate events that pushed me to really lean into it.
And that sounds great. We'll have to get you back on the podcast to talk about your entrepreneurial venture. Best of luck with that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So last question, we typically wrap up with this sort of advice question. So any advice for prospective students out there, either around, you know, sort of why an MBA or why Darden, or some things they should be thinking about as they do their research?
I think for prospective students, I would advise them to create a list of 5 questions whose answers truly matter to them. I think when I was shopping around, and, you know, there are standard questions of what is the case method like, or what is this? And I think you would be hard pressed to find a student or alumni of a top MBA program that didn't like their experience overall. And so you're going to get a positive view, but I would say narrow your question or make sure to include a set of questions whose answers could make or break your choice, right? So if community really matters to you, ask about that. If recruiting really matters to you, like does X, Y, or Z company come to campus or recruit here, ask that. If salary matters to you, ask that. So I would just, it's easy to get swept up in the excitement and emotions people have for their experience. So I would just, as prospective students look at schools, think deeply about what you want to get out of your MBA program, and then ask questions that will help guide you towards or away from schools that meet those goals.
That's such good advice, and resonates a lot with what we share with prospective students, to focus on themselves through this process, listen to their sort of voice and, you know, what matters to them ultimately, because there's certainly a lot of information out there. You get a lot of opinions, but at the end of the day, I don't think you can go wrong by just continuing to stay in touch with what matters to you.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Amanda, such a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for carving some time out for us. You know, best of luck with your second year. Best of luck with Humans of Darden. I look forward to hearing more about your entrepreneurial venture.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that was my interview with Amanda Wiggins, a second year student here at the Darden School of Business. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. And as always, till next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.